Witchcraft and the Rise of Wicca. Volume 1. By Billy Crone. Chapter 1. The Definition, Types and Location of Witchcraft. As part of our larger study, World Religions, Cults, and the Occult, this book is to warn anyone who might want to explore occult practices by dabbling in witchcraft, which involves today's unfortunate rise of Wicca. And folks, you do not want to mess with the occult. You do not want to glamorize, flirt with, or even sneeze in its directions. God gives very strong warnings about it in both the Old and New Testament. One of those warnings is in the book of Leviticus, where God tells Israel what punishments are appropriate for certain sins, including witchcraft. And just before witchcraft, he mentions another sin some of us Christians might not think of enough. The one we dealt with in our study, abortion, the mass murder of children. Here is what the Lord said to Moses in Leviticus 22:8, starting with the version on abortion practiced in those days.
Say to the Israelites, any Israelite or any foreigner living in Israel who gives any of his children to Moloch, is to be put to death.
Who is Moloch? As we saw in our study on abortion, Moloch was a statue that people in Old Testament times would heat up by placing a fire inside, making it red hot. Then they would actually throw their live children onto its arms because they thought that would gain them some success and favor in life. Of course, our reaction is, hey, that is crazy. Who would ever do something so horrible? Well, I'm not going to be able to go into that whole 8-hour study, but the Moloch thing is just their version of our modern-day abortion. Both are murdering children, and those doing so today commit the sin for the same reason that the Moloch worshippers did. It's for people's own gain. They do not want a child to mess up areas of their lives, like how they might have to responsibly quit work to take care of the child. But what does God say about those who carry out that practice? Not only for those Bible times, but dare I say, also for today, although we are under the covenant of grace now, God says they must be put to death. So, you do not want to mess with that. We should be as outraged by this as God. How dare people kill their own children? God is very serious about the consequences. In fact, God says this about a guy who would actually sacrifice his own child to Moloch.
The people of the community are to stone him.
I have said this before, and I'll say it again, that passage is not talking about giving him marijuana. And we don't even want to go there, although I just did. God is talking about using rocks, and literally rocking that guy to sleep. God tells them to stone a guy like that to death. He continues.
And I will set my face against that man and cut him off from the people, because by giving his child to Moloch, he has defiled my sanctuary and profaned my holy name. And if the people of the community close their eyes when that man gives one of his children to Moloch, and if they fail to put him to death, I'll set my face against that man and his family and will cut them off from their people together with all who follow him in prostituting themselves to Moloch.
So, God blames others in the community besides the one physically killing their kid. He is talking about those who know what he prescribes for that despicable practice, yet keep their mouths shut and do nothing. Of course, God is not pleased when his people, including Christians today, keep their mouths shut on the sin of abortion, the murdering of children. We better speak up. It's serious, and today it is our society's mass murdering of children. After those verses of Leviticus, God says he'll also set his face against another rotten, horrible practice he cannot stand, which is the occult. Here that is.
I will set my face against anyone who turns to mediums and spiritists to prostitute themselves by following them, and I will cut them off from their people.
Mediums and spiritists are those participating in occult practices. And what does he mean by prostituting themselves? He is saying they have one foot in the world and the other with God, they are playing games with God. In today's vernacular, it means they show up on Sunday but during the week they live for this world, including even the evil aspects of modern society. And for this practice, God again says he will cut those individuals off from the rest of their people, just as he will with those murdering children. So, instead of having anything to do with occult people, here is what we are supposed to do, including consecrating ourselves, which means we are to set ourselves apart for God.
Consecrate yourselves and be holy because I am the Lord your God. Keep my decrees and follow them. I am the Lord, who makes you holy.
So, right there, God makes no bones about how he feels toward occult practices. As we see in the full occult study, this is just one of a great many similar passages telling us not to mess with the occult, including the topic of this book, witchcraft, which is Wicca. And again, witchcraft is only one aspect of the occult. There are many others that we will look at as we take our time going down the full occult route. Creepy as it is, we will thoroughly deal with the subject. Always a good place to start in any research is defining the terms. So, what does witchcraft actually mean? Let's take a look at that.
The word is over 1,000 years old. Old English formed the compound witchcraft from wiki, witch, and craft, craft.
There are a couple variances of the spelling with Wicca and then the straight-up Old English Wicca. I want to emphasize that latter spelling, so you never let anyone tell you Wicca is not witchcraft. Some practicing it today will claim the two are not the same, so it is all a bunch of baloney and that Wicca being witchcraft is outdated because Wicca does not involve witchcraft today. They say they are just worshipping nature. But the truth is, Wicca literally means witch and the Wiccans use their name because witchcraft is what they are practicing. Wicca is the direct spelling of witchcraft and even in practice both are exactly the same thing, period. Don't let anyone fool you into thinking they are not.
Witchcraft is the exercise or invocation of alleged supernatural powers, demonic powers, to control people or events, practices typically involving sorcery or magic.
While witchcraft is clearly demonic, practitioners will claim it as just gods and goddesses intervening for them because they conjured up the spirits. But those spirits are demons that they are connected with. They will also say they only do innocent incantation spells to summon nature spirits. But again, those are more demons. Or they will point to their potion, made with many ingredients in a cauldron and say it can manipulate people with a supernatural force that no one can understand. But that is not true, because we know the force behind it is just more demonic activity. Now, what about all the types of witches worldwide? All over the planet there have been many versions throughout history. Of course, it is not just some American phenomenon with our depiction of a hunched-over wizened old lady, having a giant pimply nose and large pointy black hat. Witchcraft has actually been in most cultures, including those in Africa and Asia. We will talk about them in a little bit, but first, one of the most well-known witches in Western society is the old crone. Now, for those wondering, right off the bat let me verify and prove that my wife and I, the crones, are not witches, neither are our kids. We crones have nothing to do with witchcraft and I can prove it. This proof came, not because of this study, but it was when my daughter decided to explore our genealogy and found out that our last name, Crone, is German for crown, which means royalty. It turns out that she found our lineage goes way back to the first century where our ancestors were apparently royalty. They were kings and queens. That was pretty cool to learn, and I'm not saying it to boast but only as a way to show we're not witches. In fact, another aspect we will see with witchcraft, and other occult practices like voodoo, is that they are very into chicken. And as you may already know, I hate chicken, so there is a second reason I can't possibly be a witch. Okay, let's move on. Again, the old crone is the first one most of us in the Western culture think of as a witch. As you can see from the picture, she appears to have been out in the sun too long and probably ate chicken. Old crone witches are said to
meet secretly at night, indulge in cannibalism and orgiastic rites with the devil and perform black magic.
So, all kidding aside, this is bad stuff. You do not want to be involved with any kind of witchcraft or be any type of a witch. And again, as we go through this, keep in mind that we've probably all heard it said by some practitioners of this stuff that they are not involved in black magic, they only practice white magic. But it is the same. Evil is evil. There is no particular color or size of evil, just as you can eat fried, baked, or boiled chicken, but guess what? It is all evil, folks. Let's continue with the old crone.
A crone is an old woman who may be disagreeable, malicious, and sinister in manner, often with magical or supernatural associations. The crone is supposed to be a wise woman.
In fact, history talks about how many indigenous cults and occult populations around the world have had witchcraft and sorcery practices like shamanism, i.e., the Native Americans, where the people would go see the wise man or wise woman because they had powers no one else did. Oftentimes it would be the witch doctor, they view as having secret wisdom. But, of course, it is all just demonic practices.
The word crone became further specialized as the third aspect of the triple goddess popularized by Robert Graves and subsequently in some forms of neopaganism.
What is neopaganism? It is just a new form of paganism, which we will get into more later, including Wicca and witch.
The crone symbolizes the dark goddess, the dark of the moon, the end of a cycle, together with the mother and the maiden, she represents part of the circle of life.
Eventually, we will explore the witchcraft practices of circles and pentagrams, as part of the symbolism. For now, we're only looking at the types of witches, but when we get to symbolism, what's interesting is how the New Age movement and feminism both have spiritual circles they call croonings. As we have seen in other studies, that's part of what tells us that the root of feminism has nothing to do with higher pay, equal rights, or proving a woman can do everything a man can do. The root of the modern feminist movement is the practice of drawing ladies into the occult, and specifically, witchcraft.
In New Age and feminist spiritual circles, a crooning is a ritual rite of passage into an era of wisdom, freedom, and personal power.
That frames the motivation behind the feminist movement, where ladies are taught to hate those horrible men and instead to nurture their own personal power. Women are told they need freedom from the chains men have put on them so they can gain some wisdom that has been kept from them. However, as ladies keep going down that road, they finally find out it is all just an indoctrination into witchcraft. Here is an example of that in this video transcript of those actually practicing modern feminism, and you tell me if the record of their own description shows they are involved in witchcraft.
Feminist leader. The women's movement today is being called the women's spirituality movement in great part. And that is because it is not just concentrating on areas of social and political reform, but it's looking hard and fast at spiritual reform. Women are gathering today in circles, just as their 1960 counterparts did in consciousness-raising circles. But now, they are not just knocking down that door to a man's world, asking for entrance. Instead, they are looking at the myths, spiritual beliefs, religions, values, everything that runs our culture, everything that feeds our souls. We are going to take a look at the women's spirituality movement as it has been called by the women participating in it, who are weaving new stories of a returning goddess. They believe she's back on the planet, alive and well, and she could do a lot for you. This video shows a women's group meeting somewhere in the woods around a female goddess figure they have fashioned out of plants. Group leader. The goddess is alive. Group response. Magic is afoot. Group leader. The goddess is alive. Group response. Magic is afoot. The women are shown dancing in a circle, clapping and playing bongos, as well as other instruments. One of the women. What the goddess means to me is wholeness and peace. A second woman. The goddess means to me my internal strength. She has come to me and shown me the beauty that is within myself. A third woman. The goddess is my voice. She is my self-empowerment. She is my self-respect. As a result, my life has really undergone some major transformations, not only creatively, but in the pathway that I have now started to take. And I have the works of Z Budapest to thank for that.
How many times did you hear them say it's about equal rights and pay, or demonstrating something to men? They don't mention it. And by the way, Zsuzsanna Amiz Muxay is a Hungarian author who goes by the name Zsuzsanna, or Z, Budapest. She writes about feminist spirituality and was founder of the first women-only witches coven. When you do the research and peel back the layers of what's really going on in the feminist movement, from its founding all the way up to today, you see it's a spiritual movement that is leading women into these kinds of spiritual crooning circles, and it's all straight out of witchcraft. Normally, unknown at first to women getting involved in the feminist movement today, the leadership is actually trying to turn them into old crones. It's crazy. Now let me give you a couple of examples of other crones, besides that in our Western cultural traditions. A Norse myth tells of Thor, a god in Germanic mythology, supposedly wrestling a crone named Eli. And Slavic tradition has a witch called Baba Yaga, not to be confused with Baby Yoda from Disney's new Star Wars Mandalorian series. Baba Yaga is said to be a crone from another world. So that is the old crone. A second type of witch is the Black Annis. Black Annis is also known as the Black Agnes or Black Anna, and is where we get the bogeyman, which can also be represented as the boogeyman, bogeyman, boogeyman, boogey monster, or boogeyman. By the way, this study of witchcraft will be fun for those of you hooked on the history of languages. There are a huge number of words and phrases in the English language that come straight out of witchcraft and the occult, like bogeyman. Words people have used to try to protect themselves from the occult. Though we do not realize where they come from, we still say some of them today. English folklore's Black Annis is a blue-faced hag, or witch, with iron claws and a taste for human flesh, especially children. Hey, that sounds disgusting. It is a good thing the occult doesn't still practice ritual sacrificing of adults, and even children, today, right? Unfortunately, they still do, and we'll get to that later. The Black Anna supposedly lived in a cave with a great oak tree at the entrance. Oak trees are prominent in the occult, especially with the Druids. The Black Annas is said to have ventured out at night looking for unsuspecting children and lambs to eat, before tanning their skins, hanging them from a tree, and then later wearing those around her waist. Legend has it that she would reach inside houses, snatching people out with her giant claws. She supposedly also used those hands to carve her house out of a sandstone cliff. It is said Black Annas would hide in the branches of her oak tree, waiting to leap on unsuspecting prey, and because of the idea that she wanted to snatch people from their houses.
Other traditions stated that, when she ground her teeth, people could hear her, giving them time to bolt their doors and keep away from the window. It is said that cottages in parts of England were purposely built with small windows so the Black Annas could only get a single arm inside. When she howled, she could be heard 5 miles away, after which the cottagers would fasten skins across the window and place protective herbs above it to keep themselves safe.
Using protective herbs as supposed protection against evil like the Black Annas is the same as movies showing holy water or garlic being used against vampires. In fact, in another part of this overall occult study, we will get into other such items like amulets, good luck charms, talismans, and occult item of that nature. Of course, none of those protect against evil because it is only Jesus Christ who can provide that protection. The third type of witch is one we don't normally think of as a witch, but when you do the research, the fairy godmother is actually based on witches and witchcraft. The legend mentions both a good and wicked fairy godmother. Again, whether call it black or white magic, it's just like boiled, baked, or fried chicken. It's all chicken, and all evil. The fairy godmother is an entity with magical powers that has two prominent promoters. Of course, one is Disney, an organization steeped in the occult. A lot of Disney's movies and cartoons are based on the occult, including many of their old and new storylines. Disney movies like Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty include the fairy godmother, who has her roots in the figures of the Fates, the Spinner, the Allotter, and Death, that are supposedly white-robed incarnations of destiny, a storyline that comes from ancient Greek and Roman religion and mythology. Remember that Sleeping Beauty was at a spinning wheel that became her fate when she pricked her finger on the spindle and fell into a deep sleep. Good magic, witchcraft, was supposedly used to bring her out of it. But again, there is no good magic, it is all only evil witchcraft. Now, notice that what is depicted in that picture of the fairy godmother from a classic book about her. Though she is supposed to be the good fairy godmother, notice what she is doing. She's using a giant pumpkin as her cauldron and it looks creepy. Disney has since cleaned her up, but clearly in the classic literature, even the good fairy godmother was involved in witchcraft. Disney tidied up the evil queen too, but she is also just another witch. And that evil queen is part of a very wicked witchcraft that has even been made popular through Disney's newest witch movie starring Angelina Jolie. Those movies include the 2014 Maleficent and its sequel, in 2019, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Maleficent is a dark, sinister being, who puts a curse on an infant princess. This story also includes witchcraft practiced by the evil queen, who most of us know as the main antagonist in Snow White. The latter storyline comes from a German fairy tale recorded by the Brothers Grimm, where the evil queen designs many ways to murder Snow White through the use of witchcraft. The evil queen's methods included more than just the poison apple. Another aspect of Snow White was a mirror that the queen looked into and addressed as, "Mirror, mirror, on the wall." Why would the storytellers bring up the mirror? Did a vain queen, with a bad attitude, just have an extreme jealousy of the princess? Is that why she wanted to kill Snow White? Well, let's take a look at how mirrors are popular with the occult, and just remember, when you see mirrors focused on in movies, and even cartoons, it's all about the occult. In fact, the occult admits mirrors are important to them as a tool for divination and magic. They believe mirrors enable us to perceive the unseen. Mirror gazing can supposedly be used to aid and heal people, answer questions, and find lost objects or persons. They believe the power of mirrors on any reflective surface can reveal what is hidden. There is a related practice that goes by the term scrying, which is looking into a mirror or any reflective surface, and supposedly getting a vision from it. In fact, gazing at shiny surfaces is one of the oldest forms of scrying. It is a method of divination that goes as far back as the early Egyptians, Arabs, Magi, Persians, Greeks, and Romans. In Greece, the witches of Thessaly repeatedly wrote their messages from oracles, those contacting demon spirits, on mirrors, using human blood. The Romans had skilled mirror readers called speculari, which is where we get the English word speculate. It was a person skilled in the divination practice of mirror seeing. An occult website says this about some related Christian lore.
Mirrors enable demons to make themselves known.
Now, this might sound freaky, but I want to share a story that I'll back up with evidence of certain occult beliefs. One of our best friends in Bible college, I will call him Jerry, shares the spiritual torment he went through before getting saved. He was in Sacramento, living in a multi-story apartment complex he had rented. He did not know it at the time, but later found out the men living above him were witches. He said they would mess with him all the time. My friend didn't drink or do drugs, but said he would sit there at night watching little creatures literally walk in and out of the mirror, which of course totally freaked him out every time. He found out later that it was these witches living above him, using their spells to mess with him. He got out fast when he found out. This was before he got saved, so I'm sure he felt helpless against that. Still, some might think these stories of supernatural happenings are just a bunch of baloney, but here is what the occult says from their own website.
Mirrors and the application of mirrors are also a transit gate to other planes of existence. A body can go right through the mirror and provide access to the astral plane. And with repeated practice, meetings with the dead are possible.
Through that witchcraft practice, you do encounter entities that begin to communicate with you, but it ain't Cleopatra or Eleanor Roosevelt. It is a demon, who the Bible calls a familiar spirit. You are not going to see a dead human talking with you because the Bible is clear about where humans go when they die. If you're saved, you go straight to heaven, as it says in 2 Corinthians 5:8.
We are confident, I say, and would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord.
And for those who die unredeemed as non-Christians, unfortunately, they go straight to hell. And there is no coming back. Dead people do not traverse back and forth. If an entity does appear, you are dealing with a familiar spirit, a demonic influence. But this is what the occult believes about tapping into mirrors to enter another realm in the astral plane and visit other planes. This is directly from their own occult website. And one entity that can appear, among many, is what is called a gnome. You probably already know of it as a cute little figurine placed around people's landscaping. It's just a small cartoon character and apparently an excellent travel companion, according to the Travelocity commercials. Right? Wrong. Real gnomes, leprechauns, fairies, or the like, come straight out of the occult. These are entities that can appear, and gnomes are typically some of the smaller ones. So, going back to my friend, Jerry's, story, was that what those tiny creatures were coming in and out of his mirror? This is really starting to sound weird, right? It all begins to stack up as the strange, wacky, evil world of witchcraft. You don't want to mess with this, evil is real. You do not want to go down that road. Besides gnomes, the occult claims you can also tap into salamanders. In fact, the eye of the newt is a big symbol in the occult, as well as a key ingredient in their cauldrons, which, again, is used to cook up their potions that they use to manipulate people. It is all demonic. Other creatures people contact are sylphs and undines, which are feminine spirits. The former is more of an air entity and the latter is a nymph that inhabits water. So, mirrors are important to the occult, and that is why one was depicted in Snow White. It wasn't just because the lady was being vain. As a witch, of course, she would use a mirror. In fact, let me give you an example of how people involved in the occult today, unfortunately, still use mirrors as a big part of their practice. Here is what this occult lady recommended.
I wanted to tell you the power of mirrors. If you can have a mirror on you, wear it because it reflects everything back to anybody that sends any kind of evil your way. Even good stuff. You send it right back to them. You can capture energies with mirrors, too. If you do find jewelry that has a mirror in it, I would cleanse it first before you put it on and before you enchant it. Anyway, I have a couple of these. Another way you can reflect negative energy back onto somebody is if you, when you're walking towards that person, or that person is walking towards you, or you're going in the area where there's a vortex of like icky energy, you want to see yourself as a mirror. So you transform into a big mirror, and you just reflect everybody's image right back on them.
It's just sad to hear someone who still uses these evil practices today. Most people don't realize what they are involved in. So, as I have done since seeing this video, I'll just encourage us to pray for a person who is as deceived as she is, or hopefully was and isn't anymore. Again, witchcraft is all over the world and according to Russian folklore, they believe mirrors are linked to the devil because they have the power to draw souls out of the body. And here's something interesting, Did you also grow up hearing, whatever you do, don't break a mirror because that will get you 7 years of bad luck? Well, as I mentioned, you are going to learn that a lot of verbiage in our conversation actually comes straight out of witchcraft. The occult says that breaking a mirror is bad luck because the mirror can supposedly hold a soul, so, a damaged one brings injury to that soul. Of course, it's just superstition and not true, but people still believe it. With the practice of voodoo, they have a magical mirror they call a minore that only the priest and the priestess can use. Overall, witchcraft uses flat and concave mirrors, as well as other shiny reflective surfaces like crystals and crystal balls, which are often depicted in Disney stories. Basically, the occult says any reflective surface, including a bowl of water, can be a mirror. The witchcraft practice of scrying uses any reflective surface as a mirror, as long as a person can see their reflection in it. Scrying also involves taking drugs, which are important in witchcraft and the occult. People today who think they are just socially and recreationally taking drugs, say it is only for entertainment. But functionally it is not. If that is you are doing the same thing the occult does to open up spiritual doors to the demonic realm. You do not want to mess with that. And now marijuana is being legalized so more people can be exposed to all kinds of demonic aspects. But getting back to bowls of water used with scrying, that brings us to a man we've dealt with many times in other studies, Nostradamus. Actually, his name was Nostradamus, and he was a 16th century French physician and astrologer. He wrote four verse quatrains, stanzas, that resulted in people calling him a prophet. But he was actually involved with witchcraft, using reflective surfaces to get his quatrains through scrying. We do not have time to get into it here, but, basically, he gave such incredibly vague predictions, that anyone could cite or twist them to claim many future events were their fulfillment, because they were such non-specific prophecies. Almost anything could be stuck to them, so it is all ridiculous. Here is some about what he did.
Nostradamus used divination, witchcraft, claiming that a spirit, demon, helped him understand how these things worked. He used various forms of meditation, focusing on fire or water while being under the influence of mild hallucinogens.
Again, that's just plain old scrying, which is used by witches. Often with the help of drugs. What they do is concentrate on a shiny surface, or a crystal ball, until visions begin to appear. In fact, Nostradamus knew he was messing with dangerous occult practices. We know that, because the historical record says, he warned his son not to dare do what his dad had done. Here's that.
Nostradamus beseeches his infant son never to dabble in such practices for, he says, they desiccate, dry up, the body, disturb the mind and send the soul to perdition, hell. For that reason, he has reduced to ashes, burned the ancient books in which he first discovered the techniques involved. They burned, he says, with an unnatural brilliance.
When I got saved from that kind of stuff in the New Age movement, nobody gave me a sermon about the tool of witchcraft, and I certainly didn't have a whole study like this on the occult, but the very next day, the Spirit of God had me cleaning house. I had been involved with the occult, New Age for a while, so I ended up spending half a day going up and down the stairs of my second-story apartment building, getting rid of that stuff. That was just the Spirit of God convicting me. Now, if you know your Bible well, that probably sounds familiar because it is exactly what occult folks in Bible times did when saved out of the occult. We saw that in an Old Testament passage, so let us also look at the New Testament. As I did, if you or anyone you know who has gotten saved, still holds on to anything pertaining to the occult, you need to get rid of it. Do not hold on to that. The best way I can think of is to destroy those things if you have the ability. One good way is to get a big old 50-gallon barrel and burn it all so no one ever has a chance to be around those evil items. And if you're a Christian still messing with the occult, you better get far away from that and burn anything involved. Clean house. Get rid of it now. Here is Acts 19:13-20, and notice how it says these unsaved people tried to use Jesus' name, doing so in a sort of a witchcraft-type practice.
Some Jews who went around driving out evil spirits tried to invoke the name of the Lord Jesus over those who were demon-possessed. They would say, "In the name of Jesus, whom Paul preaches, I command you to come out." Seven sons of a Jewish chief priest named Sceva were doing this. One day the evil spirit answered them, "Jesus I know, and Paul the first know about, but who are you?" Then the man who had the evil spirit jumped on them and overpowered them all. He gave them such a beating that they ran out of the house naked and bleeding.
If you are experiencing demonic warfare, The last thing you ever want is for a demon to not know who you are. You want them to say, "Oh, yes, I know you, Betsy Walker. You're a child of God." But those people in the Old Testament were not able to invoke Jesus because they were not saved. The demon said it knew Jesus and about Paul but did not know those seven Jewish sons of Sceva. It's just what we'll see when we get to the information about the occult use of amulets, talismans, good luck charms, and even the Roman Catholic traditions of holy water and other baloney like that. It's all involved with experiences of demonic warfare. And without Jesus, all the practitioners attempting to use those occult items are going to get whooped on. Only Jesus Christ can deliver and save us from something like that. Let's continue reading. After the name of Jesus didn't work for them, to cast out demons, because they weren't saved and instead got a beating from the demon.
When this became known to the Jews and Greeks living in Ephesus, they were all seized with fear, and the name of the Lord Jesus was held in high honor. Many of those who believed, now came and openly confessed their evil deeds. A number who had practiced sorcery brought their scrolls together.
By the way, as part of sorcery, that passage in the Greek mentions pharmakia, which is using drugs in the practice of witchcraft. And another thing to note is that mention of scrolls. Witchcraft and the occult rely a lot on scrolls, books of spells, and other writings of that nature. The book of Acts goes on.
They brought their scrolls together and burned them publicly. When they calculated the value of the scrolls, the total came to 50,000 drachmas. In this way, the word of the Lord spread widely and grew in power.
And at that time, 50,000 drachmas was a massive amount of money. These people didn't care what it cost for all their occult paraphernalia, they wanted to burn and be rid of it right away. Living for Jesus is not prostituting ourselves to the world by having one foot in the world and the other with Jesus. It is all Jesus. So, they wanted a clean break. In those times, one drachma was one full day's wage. 50,000 drachmas divided by 365 days in a year comes out to 140 years of their income, that they just sent up in smoke. That is many millions of today's dollars. But they knew what was most important. And that was not to somehow look like Christian followers of God but still flirt with the occult. They were all in and just wanted to be rid of the occult trash, no matter the cost, because they had Jesus, who is more precious than 140 years of earnings. Anyone in a similar situation needs to make a clean break and burn the evil materials so no one else is led astray by them. One other quick aspect to mention about mirrors is that the occult magic mirrors can supposedly transmit and receive thoughts, pictures, words, and sounds, regardless of the distance. They are said to act as a viewing display for occultists involved in clairvoyance, perceiving future events, and remote viewing, perceiving things or events that are distant or otherwise unseen, both of which we will get into later. As if they are watching television, a skilled magician can gaze into a magic mirror and see distant scenes and activities. Another occult belief is that witches have no souls, which is not true because witches are humans, so they do have a soul. And that dispels something else we see in the movies where they depict vampires as having no reflection in a mirror. Again, it is not true because all people have souls. So, all that with the mirrors being part witchcraft is still going on today. Now, let's go on to the next type of witch, besides the old crone, and that is the hag. She too was considered a wise woman because she knew the secret techniques and was a kind of a fairy, or goddess, that appeared as a woman in folklore. Just like other witches, the hag has been popular in children's tales like Hansel and Gretel. That was the old hag. The term is from Middle English as a shortened version of hegetess, an Old English term for witch. Similarly, Middle Dutch uses hagedissa and Old High German is hagzusa. Respectively, they shorten those to hex and hexa. Now where have we heard hexa before? Of course, it's used as what a witch does in casting a spell or cursing someone. Let me give you an example of that. I had met a pastor in Northern California, who had a wonderful, godly homeschooling family. When they were young Christians, on fire for Jesus and sharing the gospel, some witches moved into a house next door. And when those witches found out this family next to them were Christians, the battle began. The father related to me that he thought the witches were probably cursing and hexing him and his family. He mentioned some freaky stuff that happened. At least one aspect of his story I can verify because I was around them in their house enough to know their household was very clean and orderly. These people were not trashy, dirty folks. But despite that, suddenly overnight they had a huge influx of cockroaches like you would not believe, a massive infestation. He firmly believes it was from the witches casting their hexes to mess with his family of Christians. But as Christians, do we need to be afraid of witches putting curses on us? No. Through Christians calling upon Jesus' name, that sort of evil cannot stand. Here is more about the old hag.
A hag, or the old hag, was a nightmare spirit. The old hag sat on a sleeper's chest and sent nightmares to him or her. When the subject awoke, he or she would be unable to breathe or even move for a short period of time. The state is now called sleep paralysis, but in the occult, the subject had been hag-ridden. It is still frequently discussed as if it were a paranormal state.
So, some people say certain sleep paralysis episodes are just physical, but these sorts of issues can also happen with occult practices. In Slavic folklore, the hag was called Baba Yaga, not to be confused with Baby Yoda. Now you're going to think I made this up, but apparently the Slavic witch had a forest home that was made of chicken legs. Once again, even besides my daughter's excellent work on our crone family genealogy, which proves we come from royalty instead of witches, you know by now that this crone is having nothing to do with chicken-legged houses, or chicken at all for that matter. But chicken is prominent with witches, so I rest my case against the bird that is called fowl, for a reason.
Baba Yaga would often ride through the forest, sweeping away any of her tracks with a broom.
Wait until we get to what witches use their brooms for and what they talk about when flying through the sky. Of course, it's not real flying. Instead, they are high on hallucinogens, which we'll get into more. The hag is also a creature portrayed in the Harry Potter series. But we all know that's just innocent entertainment for children, right? There is no witchcraft in those books, right? Yeah, whatever. That is not true, and we'll have a lot to look at on that later. The next witch I want to mention is the Italian Befana, and this version of a witch is going to blow your mind on some of these aspects of this witch depicted here in doll form as an old woman with her broom. Now, listen to all her similarities to Saint Nicholas, or Satan Claus I mean, Santa Claus. And then, though people want to try cleaning his story up, tell me there is no background occult aspect to Satan Claus.
Befana delivers gifts to children. Some suggest that Befana is descended from the Sabine / Roman goddess named Strenia.
Why does that sound familiar? Because the Roman witch, Strenia, would supposedly make people strong, which is where we get the word strenuous.
Befana visits all the children of Italy, to fill their socks with candy and presents if they are good, or a lump of coal or dark candy if they are bad. Being a good housekeeper, many say she will sweep the floor before she leaves. To some, the sweeping meant the sweeping away of the problems of the year. The child's family typically leaves a small glass of wine and a plate with a few morsels of food.
So, she is the female witch version of Satan Claus, who has been cleaned up today, but is still straight out of the occult.
Befana is usually portrayed as a hag riding a broomstick through the air wearing a black shawl and is covered in soot because she enters the children's houses through the chimney. She is often smiling and carries a bag filled with candy, gifts, or both.
That is just more similarities to Satan Claus, all straight out of witchcraft. And lest you think that is stretching it, recently in 2018, Italians and Spaniards together came out with a Christmas fantasy film featuring Befana. It is called The Legend of the Christmas Witch, and features a 500-year-old Befana, who is also a schoolteacher by day. Another popular type of witch is the Sea Witch. Who do we know that glamorizes that one too? You got it, Disney.
Sea witches are portrayed as women with power regarding the sea, the weather, and other aspects of seafaring life. Sea witches have been featured in European folklore for centuries. Traditionally, sea witches were witches who appeared among sailors or others involved in seafaring trade. A sea witch may be presented as a magical or fairy creature such as a mermaid or selkie.
You may ask, what is a selkie? Well, that was back before smartphones when people couldn't just take a picture of themselves. Instead, they had to hand-paint or engrave their own portrait on a canvas or etched in something like wood or stone. No, that is the description of a selkie. The selkie had nothing to do with that. A selkie was a seal-like creature that assumes human form. So it, or she, could appear as a human-looking, seal-like creature, a fairy or a mermaid. Mermaids are also big in the occult and again, something portrayed by Disney stories of the sea, like The Little Mermaid with its mermaid and sea witch.
Their powers ranged from controlling the winds and weather, or the ability to influence the catches of the fishermen, to complete power over the sea, the tides, and the moon.
But here are some things you can apparently do to upset a sea witch and, I'm sorry, but looking at that picture of the sea witch, her looks could use a little help.
offending a sea witch by means of refusing to pay for her services, insulting her looks, or refusing to acknowledge her powers, could end in disaster, as the sea witch might choose to destroy an entire ship. In addition to their powers over the water, sea witches were said to control the wind and weather. A common feature of many tales was a rope tied into three knots, which witches often sold to sailors to aid them on a voyage.
So, when superstitious sailors thought they needed protection, they paid for the witches' services. Unfortunately, many people today still seek out witches and the occult for help. But here are what sailors did with those three knots, because the last thing you wanted to happen to one of those old sailing ships, or even a modern-day sailboat, was to be stuck with no wind.
Pulling the first knot could yield a gentle, southeasterly wind, while pulling two could generate a strong northerly wind, but the third would unleash a hurricane.
So, that third one was like the shiny red button you do not want to push.
The term sea witch may be applied to a practitioner of paganism or Wicca who often uses water when casting spells.
That practice continues today with witches using water and mirrors as reflective surfaces to aid their practice.
In the occult usage, the terms sea witch and water witch may be used interchangeably.
And again, who are the most popular organizations promoting this stuff today? It has been Disney with stories like The Little Mermaid, that has the sea witch, Ursula, as the antagonist. Also, the character of Tia Dalma, in The Pirates of the Caribbean, at World's End, was technically a sea witch. And for those of you hooked on video games, in Warcraft 3, The Frozen Throne, a sea witch is actually the hero. Now, let me speed it up by throwing out random modern-day witches from all over the world. I don't think we realize how extensive this rabbit hole is. The first modern witch is called a Gardnerian witch, with followers being part of Gardnerian Wicca. When we get into Wicca, you'll see there are the devotees split into different branches of practices. Another modern witch is called the Alexandrian witch, with followers incorporating ceremonial magic from Jewish Kabbalah, which we talked about in our study appropriately called Judaism. The Alexandrian witches combine a Jewish form of mysticism and the occult. Then you have what's called the solitary witch, who performs spell work and rituals by themselves without a coven, group of witches. They either have no group by choice or just have not found any other witches to team up with yet. Another is the eclectic witch, who pulls together witchcraft practices from a variety of different occult witchcraft cultures and traditions, spell work, and rituals. From my experience in the New Age movement, before being saved, that certainly sounds like a New Age version of witchcraft. As was outlined in our study, New Age and the Last Days Deception, those involved with New Age, are in the driver's seat of man-made beliefs. Devotees are told they can pick from whatever religion they want, just making it up as they go. It is the cafeteria plan of belief systems. A follower can maybe grab a little Buddhism sprinkled with Hindu practices, and then add a solid helping of psychology, followed by dashes of self-help and even Christianity. Of course, the Christian part can't be anything that would convict a person of their unbiblical beliefs, but this similar philosophy to New Age is what witchcraft is doing with their eclectic witches, who draw from many aspects of witchcraft, making it up as they go. That is the polar opposite of what a traditional witch does, relying on old records contained in what are called grimoires, or books of spells with various witch lores and historical accounts. Then there's a hereditary witch, who is unfortunately born into witchcraft, with that knowledge having been passed down through the family generations. A hedge witch is one who works in liminal spaces, with that term meaning the supposed waiting area between one point of time and space and the next. It's supposedly that area between our human realm and the spirit realm. The hedge witch is somebody who travels between both worlds. And the reason for those witches' name is because hedges have long been used to mark property boundaries, as we see extensively today. During a recent trip to Europe, filming our documentary, The Rapture, Don't Be Deceived, we witnessed the huge number of hedges still there now. Where we use fences, they often employ hedges, instead. Believe it or not, another modern witch is the kitchen witch, who enjoys making their home surroundings a so-called sacred space and incorporates their witchcraft with their cooking. Can you guess what they are cooking? I haven't been able to verify it yet, but I'm pretty sure it's chicken. Kitchen witches focus on food and normally have an herb and vegetable garden as they get back to nature. Speaking of getting back to nature, there is also the green witch, which might as well be called the environmental witch.
Green witches are extremely nature-based. They are likely to be in tune with the seasons and often use nature materials to create their own magical tools. They most likely try to perform all their spell work and rituals outside in nature when possible.
If you think that the environmental movement is not another smokescreen to pull people into witchcraft and the occult, you are dreaming. When you do the research, just like feminism is pulling ladies into old hag and old crone witchcraft, the environmental movement is worshipping nature, exactly like the practices of witchcraft. Here is a video transcript about that, which you can find online to really see how ludicrous their behavior is. Below the forest trees, a group of men and women sit in a circle with some of them weeping.
Narrator. Deep in the woods of North Carolina, an extremist eco-group called Earth First bewails the violation of American nature. A woman sitting in the middle of the circle yells to the trees while sobbing. I want to mourn the loss of all the old growth trees I've seen. And tell them that we love them. And that we do not want them to die. That we are some people who do care. So, I want you to know that, trees. That we care. Cindy Lomé Grace from Earth First. I think we are deeply hurting in America. I think we are deeply craving answers. I think that we have lost our identity as we have evolved into technology and into an industrialized society. Bring me to this cathedral. Bring me to those guys, the trees. Bring me to this rock that has the most incredible life. That makes me feel alive.
Last time I checked, rocks are not alive. But what they are doing is worshipping nature, which is an aspect of witchcraft. They are speaking to the spirits of the trees. And by the way, that practice is a violation of Romans 1. They are worshipping created things instead of the Creator. That really is at the heart of witchcraft and the occult. Romans 1 also says that is why the wrath of God is being revealed from heaven. The final type of witch that I want to mention is the cosmic witch. Here is what they do, on top of their other witch practices.
The cosmic witch incorporates astrology and astronomy into their witchcraft. They most likely closely follow the alignment of the planets and will often coordinate their spells and rituals based on the location of the planets and the moon.
The last aspect of witches that I want to deal with is their location, which is all over the world. Here are a couple of examples from Africa and here in America, including the reason we call dusk the witching hour.
Witches are typically seen as particularly active after dusk, when law-abiding mortals are asleep. According to traditional Navajo belief, when a witch travels at night, he wears the skin of a dead animal in order to effect a transformation into that animal. These skinwalkers hold nighttime meetings at which they wear nothing except a mask, sit among baskets of corpses, and have intercourse with dead women. In some African cultures, witches are believed to assemble in cannibal covens, often at graveyards or around a fire, to feast on the blood that they, like vampires, extract from their victims. Like those in Western society suspected of child abuse and Satanism, African witches in the popular imagination are believed to practice incest and other perversions.
And they even commit murders. So, witchcraft is in high gear in third world countries and has never stopped, though you will not see that mentioned on the news. And here in America, American Indian shamanism, just another form of witchcraft, is being greatly glamorized by Hollywood. In fact, the skinwalker thing has become more well-known in our culture because of a new show from the History Channel, Skinwalker Ranch. On that program, people are trying to find out what the skinwalkers are. But you don't want to mess with that stuff because it's straight out of occult witchcraft in the American Indian culture. Here is a video transcript that exposes what is still going today with the widespread practice of witchcraft.
Does sorcery exist in modern day? Here are the facts. Belief in witchcraft predates the written word. Before early human beings learned to keep written records, they routinely paid tribute to gods for help with crops, weather, illness, hunting efforts, and more. This notion of divine intercession, that otherworldly entities, be they rain gods or demons, could alter the otherwise natural course of the universe, is one of the most common supernatural beliefs. Today, both the definition and origin of witchcraft are difficult to pin down. It is an umbrella term and has been used to describe a wide range of unique, supernatural, and spiritual beliefs around the world. And to most in the modern age, witchcraft is an archaic thing, a relic of a time before modern science, when people cowered in the face of an inexplicable and terrifying world. But is it real? And has the world really said goodbye to witchcraft? Here is where it gets crazy, absolutely not. In countries across the planet, sorcery and witchcraft are still a source of public disorder, vigorous debate, trials, executions, horrendous crimes, and more. Let's begin with the more light-hearted stuff, such as the recent law in Swaziland banning witches from flying above 150 meters on a broomstick. If caught, the witches would be required to pay a hefty fine. While this may sound amusing, it's only a small part of a much larger and much more frightening phenomenon. In countries like Angola, Nigeria, Gambia, and Malawi, even children have been accused of witchcraft. Local, religious, or spiritual authorities will exorcise these children, often orphans, by imprisoning, beating, or starving them. This practice is not strictly limited to these countries either. In 2010, a 15-year-old boy named Christy Barmu was murdered in the UK, allegedly for being a witch. Albinos in Tanzania and neighboring countries have a particularly dangerous time, as some practicing sorcerers believe that an albino's body parts have great potency as magic charms. As a result, albinos of all ages have been viciously attacked or murdered. And in the case of murder, Uganda particularly stands out. For years, reports of ritualized human sacrifice spread, eventually getting the attention of international peacekeepers. These violent acts are not restricted to the African continent. While ritualized killings pop up around the world, the work of isolated serial killers and other madmen, and other entire communities band together to take revenge on people that they perceive to be witches or sorcerers. As recently as 2013, residents of Papua New Guinea conducted witch hunts, notably torturing and beheading a teacher named Helen Rumbelai. This is only one of hundreds of witchcraft cases recorded by the UN in this country. Papua New Guinea's Sorcery Act allowed for a belief in witchcraft to be used as a partial, legal defense for killing someone suspected of black magic, until it was recently repealed. Following the spike in violence against those accused of witchcraft, most outside observers find an underlying mundane cause for these violent accusations and this pervasive belief in sorcery. Could there really be something to these accusations? Is it possible that amid reports of madness, persecution, and crime, there really is some supernatural element, something the world's media doesn't want you to know?
Yes, they do not want us to understand that witchcraft is real and is still practiced today. It helps that most people don't want to believe it. And I think part of the media's smokescreen is to make fun of witchcraft, turning it into cartoons and other lighthearted fiction. They will say it's only a movie and not something going on in our societies today. But that's not true, because witchcraft is seriously practiced, with deadly results, all over the world. In fact, many African cultures believe witches are causing all manner of diseases, disasters, sickness, and even death. Asia also has its share of witchcraft.
In many parts of Africa and Asia, epidemics and natural disasters have been interpreted as acts of witchcraft. Members of the certain Afro-Brazilian cults, for example, believe that even job loss is due to witches.
Without concrete evidence, people can just decide that some witch must have secretly hexed them. So then, that supposed victim will hire another witch to try getting the hex off of themselves and maybe even ask for a hex to be put on the other guy. But again, none of that is going to work, just like chicken is always chicken, no matter whether it's boiled, baked, or fried. Only a Christian calling on the authority of Jesus is true defense against the powers of darkness. Africans and Asians today firmly believe in witchcraft, making them a patient of people like witch doctors.
To protect against witchcraft, the patient might wear amulets, take medicine or bathe in it, or practice divination. Similarly, the Navajo Indians protect themselves against witches with gall medicine or with sand paintings.
And that leads us to the different types of protection that witches and those who believe in their power will rely on. But again, keep in mind that the only true protection is Jesus Christ. If you don't want these sorts of critters always at your door, then certainly don't mess with the occult and witchcraft. And if you are not saved, you need to get saved right now. For those of us who are already Christians, we should not be flirting with any of these occult practices. But in the next chapter, we are going to take a look at cultures around the world that, unfortunately, don't listen to God. They not only engage in witchcraft, but they do not want to listen to God about how to have protection from it. Again, the greatest protection is getting saved. It is by the name of Jesus Christ that men are saved, and also by his name that demons obey, cower, and flee. But these witches around the world do not rely on that. Instead, they resort to man-made occult techniques for so-called protection. We will see how part of the Asia culture writes on pieces of paper, calligraphy, for protection. It does not work. I also showed you the Arabic community's Nazar amulet that they think will ward off the evil eye. And when we visited Jerusalem in 2018, every knick-knack paddywhack tourist shop was selling the decorated and superstitious Hand of Miriam trinkets that some Jewish people believe will protect them from evil spirits. Those kinds of beliefs are sad and unfortunate, demonstrating how much people believe witchcraft is going on today. But instead of getting saved, they make mistake number two, by trying to fight witchcraft with witchcraft. We will get into that, next.